Because respectfully, Director, it was not the special counsel's job to conclusively determine Donald Trump's innocence or to exonerate him, because the bedrock principle of our justice system is a presumption of innocence. It exists for everyone. Everyone is entitled to it, including sitting presidents. And because there is a presumption of innocence, prosecutors never, ever need to conclusively determine it. Now, Director, the special counsel applied this inverted burden of proof that I can't find and you said doesn't exist anywhere in the department policies, and you used it to write a report. And the very first line of your report, says, and you, as you read this morning, it authorizes the special counsel to provide the attorney general with a confidential report explaining the prosecution or declination decisions reached by the special counsel. That's the very first word of your report, right?
That's correct.
Here's the problem, Director. The special counsel didn't do that. On volume one, you did. On volume two, with respect to potential obstruction of justice, the special counsel made neither a prosecution decision or a declination decision. You made no decision. You told us this morning and in your report that you made no determination. So respectfully, Director, you didn't follow the special counsel regulations. It clearly says, write a confidential report about decisions reached. Nowhere in here does it say, write a report about decisions that weren't reached. You wrote 180 pages about decisions that weren't reached, about potential crimes that weren't charged or decided. And respectfully, by doing that, you managed to violate every principle and the most sacred of traditions about prosecutors not offering extra prosecutorial analysis about potential crimes that aren't charged. So Americans need to know this as they listen to the Democrats and socialists on the other side of the aisle, as they do dramatic readings from this report, that volume two of this report was not authorized under the law to be written. It was written to a legal standard that does not exist at the Justice Department. And it was written in violation of every DOJ principle about extra prosecutorial commentary. I agree with the chairman this morning when he said Donald Trump is not above the law. He's not. But he damn sure shouldn't be below the law, which is where volume two of this report puts him.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Mueller, good morning. Your exchange
this
with
is
the gentlelady
from California
demonstrates from
NPR News, Sheila Jackson Lee here, Democrat of Texas.
The Trump campaign chair, Paul Manafort, was passing sensitive voter information and polling data to a Russian operative. And there were so many other ways that Russia subverted our democracy. Together with the evidence in Volume 1, I cannot think of a more serious need to investigate. So now I'm going to ask you some questions about obstruction of justice as it relates to Volume 2. On page 12 of Volume 2, you state, we determined that there were a sufficient factual and legal basis to further investigate potential obstruction of justice issues involving the president. Is that correct?
And do you have the citations, ma'am?
Page 12, volume 2.
And which portion of that page?
That is, we determined that there was a sufficient factual and legal basis to further investigate potential obstruction of justice issues involving the president. Is that correct?
Yes.
Your report also describes at least 10 separate instances of possible obstruction of justice that were investigated by you and your team. Is that correct?
Yes.
In fact, the table of contents serves as a very good guide of some of the acts of that obstruction of justice that you investigated, and I put it up on the screen. On page 157 of volume 2, you describe those acts, and they range from the president's effort to curtail the special counsel's investigation, the president's further efforts to have the attorney general take over the investigation, the president's orders Don McGahn to deny that the president tried to fire the special counsel, and many others. Is that correct?
Yes.
I direct you now to what you wrote, Director Mueller. The president's pattern of conduct as a whole sheds light on the nature of the president's acts and the inferences that can be drawn about his intent. Does that mean you have to investigate all of his conduct to ascertain true motive?
No.
And when you talk about the president's pattern of conduct, that include the 10 possible acts of obstruction that you investigated. Is that correct? When you talk about the president's pattern of conduct, that would include the 10 possible acts of obstruction that you investigated, correct?
I direct you to the report for how that is characterized.
Thank you. Let me go to the screen again. And for each of those 10 potential instances of obstruction of justice, you analyze three elements of the crime of obstruction of justice: an obstructive act, a nexus between the act and an official proceeding, and corrupt intent. Is that correct?
Yes.
You wrote on page 178, volume 2, in your report about corrupt intent: actions by the president to end a criminal investigation into his own conduct to protect against personal embarrassment or legal liability would constitute a core example of corruptly motivated conduct. Is that correct?
Yes.
To the screen again, even with the evidence you did find, is it true, as you note on page 76 of volume 2, that the evidence does indicate that a thorough FBI investigation would uncover facts about the campaign and the president personally that the president could have understood to be crimes or that would give rise to legal, personal, and political concerns?
I rely on the language of the report.
Is that relevant to potential obstruction of justice? Is that relevant to potential obstruction of justice?
Yes.
You further elaborate on page 157, obstruction of justice can be motivated by a desire to protect non-criminal personal interests, to protect against investigations where underlying criminal liability falls into a gray area, or to avoid personal embarrassment. Is that correct?
Yes.
I have on the screen.
Is that correct on the screen?
Can you repeat the question now that I have the language on the screen?
Is it correct? As you further elaborate, obstruction of justice can be motivated by a direct desire to protect non-criminal personal interests,
yes,
to protect against investigations where underlying criminal liability falls into a gray area,
yes,
or to avoid. Is that true?
Yes.
And is it true that the impact... Pardon?
Can you read the last question?
The last question was...
I want to make certain I got it accurate.
No, the last question was the language on the screen asking you if that's correct.
Yes.
Okay. Does a conviction of obstruction of justice result potentially in a lot of years of time in jail?
Yes. Well, again, can you repeat the question just to make certain that I have it accurate?
Does obstruction of justice warrant a lot of time in jail,
yes,
if you were convicted?
Yes.
And is
the time of the gentlelady has expired?
Thanks
this is special
much,
coverage from NPR News. James Sensenbrenner, Republican of Wisconsin, questioning Robert Mueller.
By which you were appointed. It reads, quote, at the conclusion of the special counsel's work, he or she shall provide the attorney general with a confidential report explaining the prosecution or declination's decisions reached by the special counsel. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, when a regulation uses the word shall provide, does it mean that the individual is in fact obligated to provide what's being demanded by the regulation or statute, meaning you don't have any wiggle room, right?
I'd have to look more closely at the statute.
I just read it to you. Okay. Now, volume 2, page 1, your report boldly states we determined not to make a traditional prosecutorial judgment. Is that correct?
I'm trying to find that citation, Congressman.
Director, could you speak more directly into the microphone, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, it's volume 2, page...
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
It's volume 2, page 1. It said, we determined not to make a traditional prosecutorial judgment.
Yes.
That's right in the beginning. Now, since you decided under the OLC opinion that you couldn't prosecute a sitting president, meaning President Trump, why did we have all of this investigation of President Trump that the other side is talking about when you knew that you weren't going to prosecute him?
Well, you don't know where the investigation is going to lie, and the OLC opinion itself says that you can continue the investigation even though you are not going to indict the president.
Okay, well, if you're not going to indict the president, then you just continue fishing. And that's my observation. You know, sure you, my time is limited. Sure, you can indict other people, but you can't indict the sitting president, right?
That's true.
Okay. Now, there are 182 pages in raw evidentiary material, including hundreds of references to 302, which are interviews by the FBI, for individuals who've never been cross-examined and which did not comply with the special counsel's governing regulation to explain the prosecution or declination decisions reached, correct?
And where are you reading from on that?
I'm reading from my question.
Then could you repeat it?
Okay. You have 182 pages of raw evidentiary material with hundreds of references to 302s who were never been cross-examined and which didn't comply with the governing regulation to explain the prosecution or declination decisions reached.
This is one of those areas which I declined to discuss.
I
would direct you to the report itself.
Okay. I looked at the 182 pages of it. You know, let me switch gears. Mr. Chabot and I were on this committee during the Clinton impeachment. Now, while I recognize that the independent counsel statute under which Kenneth Starr operated is different from the special counsel statute, he, in a number of occasions in his report, stated that the President Clinton's actions may have risen to impeachable conduct, recognizing that it is up to the House of Representatives to determine what conduct is impeachable. You never used the term raising to impeachable conduct for any of the 10 instances that the gentlewoman from Texas did. Is it true that there's nothing in Volume 2 of the report that says that the president may have engaged in impeachable conduct?
Well, we have studiously kept in the center of our investigation our mandate. And our mandate does not go to other ways of addressing conduct. Our mandate goes to developing the report report into the Attorney General.
With due respect, you know, it seems to me, you know, that there are a couple of statements that you made, you know, that said that this is not for me to decide, and the implication is that this is for this committee to decide. Now, you didn't use the word impeachable conduct like Starr did. There was no statute to prevent you from using the word impeachable conduct. And I go back to what Mr. Radcliffe said, and that is that even the president is innocent until proven guilty. My time is up.
Gentlemen, his time has expired. The gentleman from Tennessee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
First, Steve Cohen, Democrat of Tennessee, questioning former special counsel Robert Mueller.
Mr. Nadler said about your career, it's a model of rectitude, and I thank you. Based upon your investigation, how did President Trump react to your appointment as special counsel?
Again, I send you the report for where that is stated.
Well, there is a quote from page 78 of your report, volume 2, which reads, "When Sessions told the president that a special counsel had been appointed, the president slumped back in his chair and said, quote, oh, my God, this is terrible. This is the end of my presidency. I'm effed," unquote. Did Attorney General Sessions tell you about that little talk?
I'm not
sure. Director, please speak into the microphone.
Oh, surely. My apologies. I am not certain of the person who originally copied that quote.
Okay, well, Sessions apparently said it, and one of his aides had it in his notes, too, which I think you had, but that's become record. He wasn't pleased. He probably wasn't pleased with the special counsel, and particularly you, because of your outstanding reputation.
Correct.
Prior to your appointment, the Attorney General recused himself from the investigation because of his role in the 2016 campaign. Is that not correct?
Correct.
Recusal means the Attorney General could not be involved in the investigation. Is that correct?
That's the effect of recusal, yes.
And so instead, another Trump appointee, as you know Mr. Sessions was, Mr. Rosenstein became in charge of it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Wasn't Attorney General Sessions following the rules and professional advice of the Department of Justice ethics folks when he recused himself from the investigation?
Yes.
And yet the president repeatedly expressed his displeasure at Sessions' decision to follow those ethics rules to recuse himself from oversight of that investigation. Is that not correct?
That's accurate based on what is written in the report.
And the president's reaction to the recusal is noted in the report. Mr. Bannon recalled that the president was mad as Bannon had ever seen him, and he screamed at McGahn about how weak Sessions was. Do you recall that from the report?
That's in the report, yes.
Despite knowing that Attorney General Sessions was not supposed to be involved in the investigation, the president still tried to get the Attorney General to unrecuse himself after you were appointed special counsel. Is that correct?
Yes.
In fact, your investigation found that at some point after your appointment, quote, the president called Sessions at his home and asked if he would unrecuse himself. Is that not true?
It's true.
Now, that wasn't the first time the president asked Sessions to unrecuse himself, was it?
I know there were at least two occasions.
And one of them was with Flynn, and one of them was when Sessions and McGahn flew to Mar-a-Lago to meet with the president. Sessions recalled that the president pulled him aside to speak alone and suggested he should do this unrecusal act. Correct?
Correct.
And then when Michael Flynn, a few days after Flynn, entered a guilty plea for lying to federal agents and indicated his intent to cooperate with that investigation, Trump asked to speak to Sessions alone again in the Oval Office and again asked Sessions to unrecuse himself. True?
I refer you to the report for that.
Page 109, volume 2. Thank you, sir. Do you know of any point when the president personally expressed anger or frustrations at Sessions?
I'd have to pass on that.
Do you recall, and I think it's at page 78 of volume 2, the president told Sessions, you were supposed to protect me. You were supposed to protect me, or words to that effect.
Correct.
And is the attorney general supposed to be the attorney general of the United States of America or the consigliere for the president?
United States of America.
Thank you, sir. In fact, you wrote in your report that the president repeatedly sought to convince Sessions to unrecuse himself so Sessions could supervise the investigation in a way that would restrict its scope. Is that correct?
I rely on the report.
How could Sessions have restricted the scope of your investigation?
Well, I'm not going to speculate. If he took over or was attorney general, he would have greater latitude in his actions that enable him to do things that otherwise he could not.
On page 113, you said the president believed that an unrecused attorney general would play a protective role and could shield the president from the ongoing investigation. Regardless of all that, I want to thank you, Director Mueller, for your life of rectitude and service to our country. It's clear from your report and the evidence that the president wanted former Attorney General Sessions to violate the Justice Department ethics rules by taking over your investigation and improperly interfering with it to protect himself and his campaign. Your findings are so important because in America, nobody is above the law. I yield back the balance of my time.
Thank the gentleman for yielding back. The gentleman from Ohio.
Thank you.
Steve Chabot, Republican of Ohio, questioning former special counsel Robert Mueller.
They were expecting you to say something along the lines of, here's why President Trump deserves to be impeached, much as Ken Starr did relative to President Clinton back about 20 years ago. Well, you didn't. So their strategy had to change. Now they allege that there's plenty of evidence in your report to impeach the president, but the American people just didn't read it. And this hearing today is their last best hope to build up some sort of groundswell across America to impeach President Trump. That's what this is really all about today. Now, a few questions. On page 103 of volume 2 of your report, when discussing the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting, you reference, quote, the firm that produced the Steele reporting, unquote. The name of that firm was Fusion GPS. Is that correct?
And you're on page 103?
103, that's correct, volume 2. When you talk about the firm that produced the Steele reporting, the name of the firm that produced that was Fusion GPS. Is that correct?
I'm not familiar with that.
It's not a trick question, right? It was Fusion GPS. Now, Fusion GPS produced the opposition research document widely known as the Steele dossier, and the owner of Fusion GPA was someone named Glenn Simpson. Are you familiar with?
This is outside my purview.
Okay. Glenn Simpson was never mentioned in the 448-page Mueller report, was he?
Well, as I say, it's outside my purview, and it's being handled in the department by others.
Okay. Well, he was not. 448 pages, the owner of Fusion GPS, that did the Steele dossier, that started all this, he's not mentioned in there. Let me move on. At the same time Fusion GPS was working to collect opposition research on Donald Trump from foreign sources on behalf of the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee, it also was representing a Russian-based company, Prevazon, which had been sanctioned by the U.S. government. Are you aware of that?
It's outside my purview.
Okay, thank you. One of the key players in the – I'll go to something different. One of the key players in the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting was Natalia Vyzhnyetskaya, who you described in your report as a Russian attorney who advocated for the repeal of the Magnitsky Act. Vyzhnyetskaya had been working with none other than Glenn Simpson and Fusion GPS since at least early 2014. Are you aware of that?
Outside my purview.
Thank you. But you didn't mention that or her connections to Glenn Simpson and Fusion GPS in your report at all. Let me move on. Now, NBC News has reported the following. Quote, Russian lawyer Natalia Vyzhnyetskaya says she first received the supposedly incriminating information she brought to Trump Tower describing alleged tax evasion and donation to Democrats from none other than Glenn Simpson, the Fusion GPS owner. You didn't include that in the report, and I assume you're saying that
this is a matter being handled by others at the Department of Justice.
Okay, thank you. Now, your report spends 14 pages discussing the June 9th, 2016 Trump Tower meeting. It would be fair to say, would it not, that you spent significant resources investigating that meeting?
Well, I refer you to the report.
Okay. And President Trump wasn't at the meeting?
No, he was not.
Thank you. Now, in stark contrast to the actions of the Trump campaign, we know that the Clinton campaign did pay Fusion GPS to gather dirt on the Trump campaign from persons associated with foreign governments. But your report doesn't mention a thing about Fusion GPS in it, and you didn't investigate Fusion GPS's connections to Russia. So let me just ask you this. Can you see that from neglecting to mention Glenn Simpson and Fusion GPS's involvement with the Clinton campaign to focusing on a brief meeting at the Trump Tower that produced nothing, to ignoring the Clinton campaign's own ties to Fusion GPS, why some view your report as a pretty one-sided attack on the president?
Well, I tell you, this is still outside my purview.
All right. And I would just note finally that I guess it's just by chance, by coincidence, that the things left out of the report tended to be favorable to the president. My time's expired.
Thank you. Director Mueller, I'd like to get us back on track here.
Hank Johnson, Democrat of Georgia.
You found that President Trump directed White House counsel Don McGahn to fire you. Isn't that correct?
True.
And the president claimed that he wanted to fire you because you had supposed conflicts of interest. Isn't that correct?
True.
Now, you had no conflicts of interest that required your removal. Isn't that a fact?
That's not correct.
And in fact, Don McGahn advised the president that the asserted conflicts were, in his words, silly and not real conflicts. Isn't that true?
I refer to the report on that episode.
Well, page 85 of volume 2 speaks to that. And also, Director Mueller, DOJ ethics officials confirmed that you had no conflicts that would prevent you from serving as special counsel. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
But despite Don McGahn and the Department of Justice guidance, around May 23rd, 2017, the president, quote, prodded McGahn to complain to Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein about these supposed conflicts of interest, correct?
Correct.
And McGahn declined to call Rosenstein, telling the president that it would look like still trying to meddle in the investigation and knocking out Mueller would be another fact used to claim obstruction of justice. Isn't that correct?
Generally so, yes.
And in other words, Director Mueller, the White House counsel told the president that if he tried to remove you, that could be another basis to allege that the president was obstructing justice, correct?
That is generally correct, yes.
Now, I'd like to review what happened after the president was warned about obstructing justice. On Tuesday,
I'm sorry, Congressman, do you have a citation for the...
On, volume 2, page 81.
Thank you.
And 82. Now, I'd like to review what happened after the president was warned about obstructing justice. It's true that on Tuesday, June 13th, 2017, the president dictated a press statement stating he had, quote, no intention of firing you, correct?
Correct.
But the following day, June 14th, the media reported for the first time that you were investigating the president for obstructing of justice, correct?
Correct.
And then, after learning for the first time that he was under investigation, the very next day, the president, quote, issued a series of tweets acknowledging the existence of the obstruction investigation and criticizing it. Isn't that correct?
Generally so.
And then, on Saturday, June 17th, 2 days later, the president called Don McGahn at home from Camp David on a Saturday to talk about you. Isn't that correct?
Correct.
What was the significant about that first weekend phone call that Don McGahn took from President Trump?
Well, I'm going to ask you to rely on what we wrote about those.
You wrote in your report that on at page 85, volume 2, that on Saturday, June 17, 2017, the president called McGahn at home to have the special counsel removed. Now, did the president call Don McGahn more than once that day?
Well, I gave...
I think it was two calls.
Sorry about that.
On page 85 of your report, you wrote, quote, on the first call, McGahn recalled that the president said something like, quote, you got to do this. You got to call Rudd, correct?
Correct.
And your investigation and report found that Don McGahn was perturbed, to use your words, by the president's request to call Rod Rosenstein to fire him. Isn't that correct?
Well, there was a continuous colloquy. There was a continuous involvement of Don McGahn responding to the president's entreaties.
And he did not want to put himself in the middle of that. He did not want to have a role in asking the attorney general to fire the special counsel, correct?
Well, I would, again, refer you to the report and the way it is characterized in the report.
Thank you. At volume 2, page 85, it states that he didn't want to have the attorney general, he didn't want to have a role in trying to fire the attorney general. So at this point, I will yield back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mueller.
This is Louis Gohmert, Republican.
Let me ask unanimous consent, Mr. Chairman, to submit this article, Robert Mueller, unmasked for the record.
Without objection.
Now, Mr. Mueller, who wrote the 9-minute comments you read at your May 29th press conference?
I'm not going to get into that.
Okay, so that's what I thought. You didn't write it. A 2013 puff piece in the Washingtonian about Comey said basically when Comey called, you drop everything you were doing. It gave examples. You're having dinner with your wife and daughter. Comey calls, you drop everything and go. The article quoted Comey as saying, if a train were coming down the track, and I quote, at least Bob Mueller will be standing on the tracks with me.
Yeah.
You and James Comey have been good friends or were good friends for many years, correct?
Well, we were business associates. We both started off in the Justice Department about this.
You were good friends. You can work together and not be friends, but you and Comey were friends.
We were friends.
That's my question. Thank you for getting to the answer. Now, before you were appointed as special counsel,
Had you talked to James Comey in the preceding 6 months?
No.
When you were appointed as special counsel, was President Trump's firing of Comey something you anticipated investigating, potentially obstruction of justice?
I'm not going to get into that. FBI internal deliberations in the Justice Department.
Actually, it goes to your credibility, and maybe you've been away from the courtroom for a while. Credibility is always relevant. It's always material, and that goes for you, too. You're a witness before us. Let me ask you, when you talked to President Trump the day before he appointed or you were appointed as special counsel, you were talking to him about FBI director position again. Did he mention the firing of James Comey?
Not as a candidate. I was asked.
Did he mention the firing of James Comey in your discussion with him?
Cannot remember.
Pardon?
Cannot remember. Don't believe so, but I'm not going to be specific.
You don't remember. But if he did, you could have been a fact witness as to the president's comments and state of mind on firing James Comey.
I suppose that's possible.
Yeah. So most prosecutors want to make sure there's no appearance of impropriety. But in your case, you hired a bunch of people that did not like the president. Let me ask you, when did you first learn of Peter Strzok's animus toward Donald Trump?
In the summer of 2017.
You didn't know before he was hired?
I'm sorry? What did you...
You didn't know before he was hired for your team?
Know what?
Peter Strzok hated Trump.
Okay.
You didn't know that before he was made part of your team. Is that what you're saying?
I did not know that.
All right. When did you first learn?
When he did find out, I acted swiftly to have him reassigned elsewhere in the FBI.
Well, there's some discussion about how swift that was. But when did you learn of the ongoing affair he was having with Lisa Page?
About the same time I learned from Strzok.
Did you ever order anybody to investigate the deletion of all of their texts off of their government phones?
Once we found that Peter Strzok was an author of...
You're not answering my question. Did you order an investigation into the deletion and reformatting of their government phones?
No, there was an IG investigation ongoing.
Well, listen, regarding collusion or conspiracy, you didn't find evidence of any agreement, I'm quoting you, among the Trump campaign officials and any Russia-linked individuals to interfere with our U.S. election, correct?
Correct.
So you also note in the report that an element of any of those obstructions you referenced requires a corrupt state of mind, correct?
Corrupt intent, correct.
Right. And if somebody knows they did not conspire with anybody from Russia to affect the election, and they see the big Justice Department with people that hate that person coming after them, and then a special counsel appointed who hires dozen or more people that hate that person, and he knows he's innocent, he's not corruptly acting in order to see that justice is done. What he's doing is not obstructing justice. He is pursuing justice. And the fact that you ran it out 2 years means you perpetuated injustice.
I take your question.
Gentleman's time has expired. The witness may answer the question.
I take your question.
The gentleman from Florida.
This is special Director coverage Mueller, from NPR News. Robert
Director
Mueller testifying
like to get
before
back to your
Congress.
Covering June of 2017.
This is Ted Deutsch of Florida,
there was
a Democrat.
Bombshell article that reported that the President of the United States was personally under investigation for obstruction of justice. And you said in your report on page 90, volume 2, and I quote, news of the obstruction investigation prompted the President to call McGahn and seek to have the special counsel removed, close quote. And then in your report, you wrote about multiple calls from the president to White House counsel Don McGahn. And regarding the second call, you wrote, and I quote, McGahn recalled that the president was more direct, saying something like, call Rod, tell Rod that Mueller has conflicts and can't be the special counsel. McGahn recalled the president telling him, Mueller has to go, and Call me back when you do it. Director Mueller, did McGahn understand what the president was ordering him to do?
I direct you to the what we've written in the report in terms of characterizing and, his feelings.
And in the report, it says, quote, McGahn understood the president to be saying that the special counsel had to be removed. You also said on page 86 that, quote, McGahn considered the president's request to be an inflection point, and he wanted to hit the brakes, and he felt trapped, and McGahn decided he had to resign. McGahn took action to prepare to resign. Isn't that correct?
I direct you again to the report.
And in fact, that very day, he went to the White House, and quoting your report, you said, quote, he then drove to the office to pack his belongings and submit his resignation letter, close quote.
That is directly from the report.
It is. And before he resigned, however, he called the president's chief of staff, Reince Priebus, and he called the president's senior advisor, Steve Bannon. Do you recall what McGahn told them?
Whatever was said will appear in the report.
It is. And it says on page 87, quote, Priebus recalled that McGahn said that the president asked him to do crazy expletive. In other words, crazy stuff. The White House counsel thought that the president's request was completely out of bounds. He said the president asked him to do something crazy. It was wrong. And he was prepared to resign over it. Now, these are extraordinarily troubling events, but you found White House counsel McGahn to be a credible witness. Isn't that correct?
Correct.
Director Mueller, the most important question I have for you today is why? Director Mueller, why did the President of the United States want you fired?
I can't answer that question.
Well, on page 89 in your report, on volume 2, you said, and I quote, substantial evidence indicates that the president's attempts to remove the special counsel were linked to the special counsel's oversight of investigations that involved the president's conduct, and most immediately, to reports that the president was being investigated for potential obstruction of justice, close quote. Director Mueller, you found evidence, as you lay out in your report, that the president wanted to fire you because you were investigating him for obstruction of justice. Isn't that correct?
That's what it says in the report, yes. And I stand behind the report.
Director Mueller, that shouldn't happen in America. No president should be able to escape investigation by abusing his power. But that's what you testified to in your report. The president ordered you fired. The White House counsel knew it was wrong. The president knew it was wrong. In your report, it says there's also evidence the president knew he should not have made those calls to McGahn. But the president did it anyway. He did it anyway. Anyone else who blatantly interfered with a criminal investigation like yours would be arrested and indicted on charges of obstruction of justice. Director Mueller, you determined that you were barred from indicting a sitting president. We've already talked about that today. That is exactly why this committee must hold the president accountable. I yield back.
The gentleman yields back. The gentlelady from Alabama.
Director Martha Roby, Republican of Alabama, questioning former special counsel Robert Mueller, live on Capitol Hill.
As it relates to this firing discussion, that I would refer you to the report and the way it was characterized in the report. Importantly, the president never said fire Mueller or in the investigation, and one doesn't necessitate the other. And McGahn, in fact, did not resign. He stuck around for a year and a half. On March 24th, Attorney General Barr informed the committee that he had received the special counsel's report, and it was not until April 18th that the Attorney General released the report to Congress and the public. When you submitted your report to the Attorney General, did you deliver a redacted version of the report so that he would be able to release it to Congress and the public without delay, pursuant to his announcement of his intention to do so during his confirmation hearing.
I'm not going to engage in discussion about what happened after the production of our report.
Had the Attorney General asked you to provide a redacted version of the report?
We worked on the redacted versions together.
Did he ask you for a version where the grand jury material was separated?
Not going to get into details.
Is it your belief that an unredacted version of the report could be released to Congress or the public?
That's not within my purview.
Seem to have lost our feed there from Capitol Hill. It's coming back.
Rule 6E
there
material.
It is. Martha Roby
questioning
Robert Mueller.
Why did you not take
Robert
a similar
Mueller.
Action so Congress could view this material?
We had a process that we were operating on with the Attorney General's office.
Are you aware of any Attorney General going to court to receive similar permission to unredact 6E material?
I'm not aware of that being done.
The Attorney General released the special counsel's report with minimal redactions to the public and an even lesser redacted version to Congress. Did you write the report with the expectation that it would be released publicly?
No, we did not have an expectation. We wrote the report understanding that it was demanded by the statute and would go to the Attorney General for further review.
And pursuant to the special counsel regulations, who is the only party that must receive the charging decision resulting from the special counsel's investigation?
With regard to the president or generally?
No, generally.
Attorney General?
At Attorney General Barr's confirmation hearing, he made it clear that he intended to release your report to the public. Do you remember how much of your report had been written at that point?
Do not.
Were there significant changes in tone or substance of the report made after the announcement that the report would be made available to Congress and the public?
I can't get into that.
During the Senate testimony of Attorney General William Barr, Senator Kamala Harris asked Mr. Barr if he had looked at all the underlying evidence that the special counsel's team had gathered. He stated that he had not. So I'm going to ask you, did you personally review all of the underlying evidence gathered in your investigation?
Well, to the extent that it came through the special counsel's office, yes.
Did any single member of your team review all the underlying evidence gathered during the course of your investigation?
As has been recited here today, a substantial amount of work was done, whether it be search warrants or
My point is there was no one member of the team that looked at everything.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
Okay. It's fair to say that in an investigation as comprehensive as yours, it's normal that different members of the team would have reviewed different sets of documents, and few, if anyone, would have reviewed all of the underlying.
Thank you. Yes.
How many of the approximately 500 interviews conducted by the special conference did you attend personally?
Very few.
On March 27, 2019, you wrote a letter to the Attorney General essentially complaining about the media coverage of your report. You wrote, and I quote, "The summary letter the department sent to Congress and released to the public late in the afternoon of March 24 did not fully capture the context, nature, and substance of this office work and conclusions. We communicated that concern to the department on the morning of March 25th. There is now public confusion about critical aspects of the result of our investigation." Who wrote that March 27th? Letter.
Well, I can't get into who wrote it, the internal deliberation.
But you signed it.
What I will say is the letter stands for itself.
Okay. Why did you write a formal letter since you had already called the Attorney General to express those concerns?
I can't get into that internal deliberation.
Did you authorize the letter's release to the media or was it leaked?
I have no knowledge on either.
Well, you went nearly 2 years without a leak. Why was this letter leaked?
I can't get into it.
Was this letter written and leaked for the express purpose of attempting to change the narrative about the conclusions of your report? And was anything in Attorney General Barr's letter referred to as principal conclusions inaccurate?
The time of the gentlelady has expired.
Can you answer the question, please?
And the question is?
Yes, you may answer the question.
Was anything in Attorney General Barr's letter referred to as the principal conclusions letter dated March 24th inaccurate?
Well, I am not going to get into that.
Time of the gentlelady has expired. The gentlelady from California.
Karen Bass, Democrat of California, as we continue listening to Robert Mueller testifying live on Capitol Hill.
I would like to ask you about the second of those five obstruction episodes. It is in the section of your report beginning on page 113 of volume 2 entitled, quote, "The President orders McGahn to deny that the President tried to fire the special counsel," end quote. On January 25th, 2018, the New York Times reported that, quote, "The President had ordered McGahn to have the Department of Justice fire you." Is that correct?
Correct.
And that story related to the events you already testified about here today, the President's calls to McGahn to have you removed, correct?
Correct.
After the news broke, did the President go on TV and deny the story?
Do not know.
In fact, the President said, quote, "Fake news, folks, fake news, a typical New York Times fake story," end quote, correct?
Correct.
But your investigation actually found substantial evidence that McGahn was ordered by the President to fire you, correct?
Yes.
Did the President's personal lawyer do something the following day in response to that news report?
I'd refer you to the coverage of this in the report.
On page 114, quote, "On January 26, 2018, the President's personal counsel called McGahn's attorney and said that the President wanted McGahn to put out a statement denying that he had been asked to fire the special counsel," end quote. Did McGahn do what the President asked?
I refer you to the report.
Communicating through his personal attorney, McGahn refused because he said, quote, "That the Times story was accurate in reporting that the President wanted the special counsel removed." Isn't that right?
I believe it is, but I refer you again to the report.
Okay, so Mr. McGahn, through his personal attorney, told the President that he was not going to lie. Is that right?
True.
Did the President drop the issue?
I refer to the write-up of this in the report.
Okay, next, the President told the White House Staff Secretary, Rob Porter, to try to pressure McGahn to make a false denial. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What did he actually direct Porter to do?
And I send you back to the report.
Okay, well, on page 113, it says, quote, "The President then directed Porter to tell McGahn to create a record to make it clear that the President never directed McGahn to fire you," end quote. Is that correct?
That is, as it stated in the report.
And you found, quote, "The President said he wanted McGahn to write a letter to the file for our records," correct?
Correct.
And to be clear, the President is asking his White House counsel, Don McGahn, to create a record that McGahn believed to be untrue while you were in the midst of investigating the President for obstruction of justice, correct?
Generally correct.
And Mr. McGahn was an important witness in that investigation, wasn't he?
I'd have to say yes.
Did the President tell Porter to threaten McGahn if he didn't create the written denial?
I'd refer you to the write-up of it in the report.
In fact, didn't the President say, quote, and this is on page 116, "If he doesn't write a letter, then maybe I'll have to get rid of him," end quote.
Yes.
Did Porter deliver that threat?
I again refer you to the discussion that's found on page 115.
Okay, but the President still didn't give up, did he? So the President told McGahn directly to deny that the President told him to have you fired. Can you tell me exactly what happened?
I can't beyond what's in the report.
Well, on page 116, it says the President met him in the Oval Office. Quote, "The President began the Oval Office meeting by telling McGahn that the New York Times story didn't look good and McGahn needed to correct it." Is that correct?
Correct. So, as it's written in the report, yes.
The President asked McGahn whether he would do a correction, and McGahn said no. Correct?
That's accurate.
Well, Mr. Mueller, thank you for your investigation uncovering this very disturbing evidence. My friend, Mr. Richmond, will have additional questions on the subject. However, it is clear to me, if anyone else had ordered a witness to create a false record and cover up acts that are subject of a law enforcement investigation, that person would be facing criminal charges. I yield back my time.
The gentlelady yields back. The gentleman from Ohio.
Director, the FBI
interviewed
Joseph
Jim Jordan, Republican
Mifsud
of Ohio, questioning Robert Mueller.
In that interview, Mr. Mifsud lied.
You point this out on page 193, volume one, MIPSID denied. MIPSID also falsely stated. In addition, MIPSID omitted. Three times he lied to the FBI, yet you didn't charge him with the crime.
Excuse me, did you say 193?
Volume one, 193. He lied three times, you pointed out in the report. Why didn't you charge him with the crime?
I can't get into internal.